Today is the third anniversary of the death of Pope John Paul, that unforgettable day in 2005 when the eyes and cameras of the world were trained on the Vatican as the late Pope lived out his last hours on this earth. Pope Benedict marked this anniversary by celebrating a Mass today in front of St. Peter's Basilica for the eternal repose of his predecessor's soul. John Paul died on the eve of Divine Mercy Sunday, and Pope Benedict has described his predecessor as an apostle of divine mercy, a theme he returned to during his homily at the Mass. Lydia O'Kane reports.
It may have been 3 years since the passing of Pope John Paul II, but judging by the thousands of people who packed St. Peter's Square to mark this third anniversary, his popularity was still very much in evidence. A river of cardinals and bishops processed through the pilgrims, many of whom were from the late pontiff's homeland, Poland. Clearly visible, too, were banners paying tribute to Pope John Paul II, some with his image, others with the profound words he used, like, "Don't be afraid." Pope Benedict, who had presided over his predecessor's funeral Mass in 2005, on Wednesday celebrated the Mass to mark the third anniversary of his death. The Holy Father, dressed in red and gold vestments, greeted the crowds as he made his way to the altar in front of St. Peter's Basilica.
Riviviamo con emozione le ore di quel sabato sera. Quando la notizia della morte fu accolta da una grande folla in preghiera che gremiva Piazza San Pietro.
In his homily, Pope Benedict recalled that unforgettable night when Pope John Paul II departed from this life. We relive, he said, with emotion the hours of that Saturday evening when the news of the death was given to the crowds of people gathered in prayer in St. Peter's Square. For days after, the Vatican Basilica and this square really were the heart of the world. An unbroken river of pilgrims filed past the body of this venerated pontiff, and his funeral marked a further outpouring of esteem and affection. Pope Benedict went on to recall the words of St. Paul about the suffering Jesus. If we die with him, we will also live with him. If we persevere with him, we will also reign with him. Since he was a child, the Holy Father said, Karol Wojtyła had tested the truth of these words, encountering the cross through his life, with his family and with his countrymen. Pope Benedict continued by saying that Pope John Paul II had decided early on to carry that cross together with Jesus, following his footprints.
La misericordia di Dio lo disse egli stesso è una chiave di lettura privilegiata del suo pontificato.
The Pope also had a special message during his homily for the participants of the First World Congress of Divine Mercy being held in Rome this week. He said the mercy of God was a key element of the pontificate of Pope John Paul II. He wanted that message of the merciful love of God to reach all men and women and urge the faithful to be witnesses. For this purpose, he raised the chief devotee of Divine Mercy, Sister Faustina Kowalska, to sainthood. Finally, the Holy Father said, We give thanks to the Lord for giving the Church this faithful and brave servant. We praise and we bless the Virgin Mary for having kept watch incessantly over him and his ministry.
We have remembered with love my venerated predecessor, Pope John Paul II. May his example of joy and courage in his service to the Church inspire us to embrace with hope and generosity the task of being faithful Christians in our daily lives.
Following the Mass, Pope Benedict travelled round St. Peter's Square in the affectionately named Popemobile, waving to the estimated 40,000 strong crowd. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
But how is the anniversary of Pope John Paul's death been marked in his native Poland? The late Pope was the first Pole ever elected to the papacy, and he is especially revered in his homeland for his inspirational role in helping to topple communist rule in Eastern Europe. Zbigniew Nowoski is a Polish Catholic intellectual and magazine editor who knew Pope John Paul and who acts as an advisor for the Pontifical Council for the Laity. Nowoski told me that 3 years after his death, the memory of the former pope is still very much alive in his native land.
Of course, John Paul II has been the most important pole in our history, and it's impossible that his memory will be forgotten. There, all over the country, there are in prayers, concerts, exhibitions, scientific conferences, many, many events that are going to commemorate, and not only commemorate, but to think about today's challenges, our society, of our church, in the light of John Paul II's pontificate. Of course, there is not such a great social involvement like 3 years ago, when everybody was as active participants of the Pope's agony, but the number of initiatives is really great. They happen both at the national and local level.
You knew the late Pope and you met him a number of times. What is your most lasting memory of him as a person?
Well, the most funny event took place when I wrote to the Pope an issue of our monthly review. We knew that Pope was among our readers because he wrote this custom from Krakow to the Vatican. We kept sending him issues of our publications, every issue of our publication, right after it was published. But I remember when I came to the Pope holding this 500th number of Vienge, I gave it to him, and it was the end of the month. The Pope looked at it and said, "Well, I have already read it, so I know it." He received this issue a couple of days before, simply by post. It was the most funny event.
When you talked to him, did he have a good sense of humour? Was he somebody who was always ready, perhaps, to make a joke? Or did he come across as a very serious, very spiritual man?
Well, my contacts with the Pope were not so close, but I had a privilege to be twice at the Pope's table to have dinner with him, but it was at the end of the pontificate. What I experienced myself was the Pope was very much interested in developments in Poland. I remember myself being a young journalist. When I was introduced to the Pope, he said, "Okay, I know you from what you write. I've read what you have written." And this was a surprise for me. I was really a beginner in this job.
Do many people in Poland still pray to Pope John Paul for his intercession or seeking to require relics of his clothing? In that sense, are they still very much sort of looking to him to help them in their need?
Yes, the number of people who pray for the Pope's intercession is really high. The center of John Paul II's thought in Warsaw has recently made such a research, which has just been published, and almost everybody who claims to be Catholic says that more or less often he or she prayed for the Pope's intercession or through asking God help through intercession of John Paul II. So this is a very popular way of having spiritual ties with the Pope. The other way is popularity of books about him, about his pontificate.
I was speaking there to Zbigniew Nowoski, Polish Catholic intellectual and magazine editor. Pope John Paul was a giant on the world stage and broke so many records during his 26-year leadership of the church that it's difficult to pay tribute to his many achievements in a few lines. Father Jerry O'Collins is a Jesuit theology professor at St. Mary's University College in southwest London, and before that taught at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome for over 30 years. He is currently compiling a book that looks at some aspects of Pope John Paul's theological legacy. I asked him to assess how keenly the memory of this great pope lives on 3 years after his passing.
Well, last week I was out and about at a two-day meeting on his legacy. I co-chaired it at St Mary's University College, Twickenham, and he was certainly, John Paul II remains very alive for people. Like a Jewish rabbi was there, that he remains very grateful and inspired by the things that John Paul II did to heal terrible wounds between the Catholic Church and the Jewish community. Then there was Edward Sturton of BBC Radio 4 was there. He published a book on a biography of John Paul II a couple of years ago, and he had anecdotes to tell, and he was down there for the funeral mass in 2005. Someone else who would be working on the Lutheran Catholic dialogue, he wanted to exploit, use, be inspired by the ecumenical initiatives of John Paul II. So it was a pretty good picture, really, the interest that people still have in his memory and wanting to take on board and appropriate everything that's there.
Do you find that there is a widespread belief among people that Pope John Paul will soon join the ranks of the saints, at least before too long?
I think people have taken that for granted. And I think people realise, too, he was great but not perfect. He was definitely a saint. But saints are great but not necessarily perfect. They have their human limits. The great thing about saints is they pick themselves up and keep climbing. They die climbing, if you like. And that was very true of him. He soldiered on right to the end when he even lost his speech. But then he more or less died on camera. It was an extraordinary ending to a unique life.
And how important do you think it is for people that he will eventually be canonized?
People have got different agenda, I suppose. There are people who are not Catholic Christians, people that say Lutherans, who appreciate what he did for the Catholic Lutheran dialogue, and for his to be raised to the altars. That would be, for some of them, at least a sign of, you know, the Catholic Church is approving of what he did there. And then you've got, I was talking last week a lot to a Jewish rabbi, and for him the relations between Catholicism and Judaism, John Paul II did a great deal to heal them. So people like that would be glad to see John Paul II's memory being honoured, which also means being committed to his policies. There's great respect for him here. The memory of his visit in 1982 is very alive. Last week I was talking to an Anglican bishop, Christopher Hill of Guildford, and he was present there at the historic meeting between Archbishop Runcie and John Paul II in Canterbury Cathedral. So there are memories that are alive, and I suppose people seeking to be inspired by the good things that John Paul II set himself to achieve.
You mentioned a bit earlier the extraordinary events surrounding his death, as you said, that was almost on camera, and not to mention what happened afterwards when those millions of people turned up to pay respects to him. What are some of your abiding memories, both of that fateful evening 3 years ago, but even of the events that followed?
Well, I remember two things in particular, among many things that struck me. One was when he was carried in a coffin, but with the lid not on, for everybody to see, across from the Apostolic Palace, through St. Peter's Square, into St. Peter's Basilica. He just seemed like a Viking king being held high there for his people to see. That was a very remarkable sight, that. And then, of course, he lay in state there in front of the high altar in St. Peter's, and a couple of million people filed past to pay their last respects. That was one memory. And the other one, it came at the end of the funeral service, at the end of the mass. The dignitaries and prime ministers and presidents and so on, they left rather rapidly to go inside the basilica to shake the hand of Cardinal Ratzinger, who'd presided over the celebrated the mass, and then they were heading for the airport to fly home. But there was one figure left there, that was Rabbi Elio Toaff, who was then the chief rabbi of Rome, and this devout old man standing there with his black hat, just praying there by himself, praying for his friend, with his friend, John Paul II, and then a young Monsignor came along the row and took him by the arm and led him out. But it was a very moving scene, that the old rabbi, who was so appreciative of John Paul II, just standing there alone, the others had gone, and he wanted to continue his prayer.
I know that you're writing a book about Pope John Paul's theological legacy. Could you explain or expand a little bit on that subject for us?
It's a book to which I contribute a chapter on his theological work, but there are other chapters in the book by people like Christian Troll. He's an expert on Islam, looking at John Paul II and Muslims. And then there's also a book by Sister Margaret Shepherd. She's been very prominent here in the United Kingdom on Jewish Catholic relations, and Chaussy's written an account of the highlights in his career for Jewish-Catholic relations. So people are contributing chapters, not on everything, but on some major topics like Islam, Judaism, then also his theological work, his ecumenical work. Bishop Christopher Hill has a very nice piece from an Anglican point of view.
I know that you once had lunch with the late Pope. Can you tell us a little bit more about his personality and what he was like as a character?
Well, the lunch followed a meeting. It was a meeting about the nature of salvation, what Jesus Christ has done for us. And he sat there really just listening to various professors, some of them from Eastern Christianity. I was representing Western Christianity. And then we went off to lunch together. And over lunch, he really had a lot to say about different things, about his encyclical on the Holy Spirit, where he described the Holy Spirit as the self-communication of God. And it was right around the time that Bernard Langer, the German Christian, had won the Masters tournament in Augusta, Georgia, and I told the Pope that he'd had competition in announcing the resurrection, because when Bernard Langer won the tournament, he said, well, it's today's Easter Sunday, and that's the most important day of the year, and it's far more important, infinitely more important, that Jesus rose from the dead than that I win the Masters tournament. But I discovered the Pope didn't know much about, or anything much about, golf, so I had to fill him in about golf and the Masters in Augusta, Georgia. So it was fun, really. One thing that struck me is how he was focused on the here and now. He'd just been in Albania the day before, and he was the second world leader to turn up in that country when it became free. But he didn't want to talk about yesterday. He was completely focused on today, the people he was with. His two secretaries talked about yesterday, what happened in Albania, but not John Paul II, was on the company he was with and the issues we were discussing and other issues as well, but here and now, not yesterday.
If you had to sum up, what would you say was Pope John Paul's greatest achievement or his most lasting legacy?
That's a great question. It was one we asked all the participants last week at the meeting, and my answer, I'd stick with it, on the spur of the moment, was he embodied the coming of the world church. He was everywhere. He was one of the most visible faces in the world. And he thought that being truly human and loving towards people was important, and faith in Jesus can help us to live a life that expresses love and concern towards all humanity. And he embodied that, and he took his body around the world, and people saw that embodied presence of the church with this message of, yes, Jesus-centeredness, but great concern for suffering men and women everywhere.
I was speaking there to Jesuit Father Jerry O'Collins, theology professor and author.